if you're yielded, if you're pliable, if you're flexible, and you can say, God, your way, not my way, then he will bring you to the how. He will bring you to the peace. He will bring you to the true righteousness and holiness and his will, which is good and acceptable and perfect. But we have to be a living sacrifice. First, sacrificing self and saying, what I want doesn't matter. What you want matters, God. I put off my old self and I put on Jesus Christ, whatever that looks like. Hi, this is Holly, and welcome to Study with Friends. Each week at this time, we're here to study God's Word with you and with each other. We're a group of women who love God's Word and God's people. This week, I'm here with my friends Romy and Jan, and we're looking at Ephesians 4, verses 22 to 24, which teaches us how to put off the old self. Today, you'll hear just one part of the time we spent together on this scripture. So visit studywithfriends.org to hear the whole conversation. At the bottom of the homepage, you'll see a search box. Enter the words put off to find the page with all the broadcasts in this series and also the discussion guide we used to help us unpack it together. We're having a great time learning from God and from each other. I hope you find something today that's helpful to you. Let's get started. We must allow ourselves to be transformed.
Right.
And to satisfy you, the how of that is abiding, growing.
Trusting.
You know, listen, the truth of the how is...
But, you know, that actually goes back to the legalism of it. Like sometimes it's not so important in the how as it is to just allow God to work in you.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And the truth of the how is Matthew 6:33. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well.
Right.
That's the truth of the how.
Right.
Seek first him.
Right. And then allow, and almost sort of like sit back and enjoy the ride and watch what he does.
That's right. That's hard for you. So, that's hard for you.
Yeah.
That's so hard for all of us. Why am I pointing a finger at you?
We all want the formula that gets us there faster, right?
Well, more than that, Romy, we want to think we could be a part of the transformation.
Right.
We want to think that we have something to offer. This is the whole problem with salvation and the human mind. We can't fathom that we bring nothing.
Right.
And yet he gives it fully. The problem is we want to feel like we can bring something to the table. It's ego. It's self-driven. That's always what we think. What can I bring? What can I do? When someone invites you to their house, what's the first thing you say?
What should I bring?
What should I bring?
Well, Jesus invites you into his house.
Right.
And your first response is, what should I bring?
Right.
And listen, he says in Romans 12:1, bring a living sacrifice.
Yeah.
But it is not going to get you in.
Right.
You're in.
Right.
You know, my favorite response is, just bring yourself.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather feed you. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to have you, I'd rather feed you. But my least favorite response to hear is just bring yourself.
Right.
I'm bringing something anyway.
Yeah.
I'll bring a little candle or something because I feel like I have to bring something.
Right. Exactly.
Because I'm messed up. Because that makes me, because guess what? That makes me feel better.
Right. Right.
Because I don't feel good about being the taker.
Right.
And so to make myself feel better, I got to bring something. That's how we are wired. We don't want to be the taker. We want to be the giver. Nobody wants to be the taker. Mm-hmm. You would bring 100 meals to 100 friends in need before you would take one. No, no, I'm fine. On my deathbed. No, no, I'm fine.
Good. Yeah. Right.
So stupid. Be the receiver of the God who made you.
Right.
He made you. He made you for his pleasure. Receive. And that's so difficult, almost impossible for us to fathom, let alone live out. And so you're stuck in the how, but you're right. You have a sense of just enjoy the ride.
Right, totally.
And you also have a sense, Romy, of that beautiful peace will create in me a desire for obedience. And that's what I bring.
Right, right.
That's what I bring.
Mm-hmm.
I bring a response of praise. I bring a response of worship. I bring a response of obedience. But it is a response.
Yes.
It's not a first fruit offering. It is not. It's my response to grace. It's right. Not because I'm so slick that I can obey. It's because I respond on my face. This humble offering, God, my humble, humble offering, my worm-filled, dirt-riddled, filthy offering. It's all I have, but I give it to you. Because what you've given to me is incredibly unfathomable. That's what it is. That's the how. From your face, not even from your knees, from your face, you respond rightly to the Lord. And then the how, honestly, it works itself out.
Right.
I know that sounds simplistic, but it is the truth.
Yeah.
We get all flopping around like fish out of water with the how. I'm not going to lie to you. Even in, we've been doing this ministry for a long time now, and I still get jammed up with the how. I'm like, oh no, how are we going to pay the bills? Because Lord knows, month to month, we never have enough money. But month to month, we have never been short. We have always paid our bills on time because God provides. And so why am I so worried about how?
Mm-hmm.
Leave the how to him.
Yeah, true.
You know, another, of course, you're getting a sense of Charles Stanley. He's one of my favorites. But another one of his big phrases is obey God and leave the consequences to him. Walk forward in what he tells you to do. And don't worry about the how.
Right.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. That's his job.
Yeah.
And I hate to be mean, but he doesn't need us. He does not need us to figure out the how. We want to know the how.
Yeah.
Because we don't like walking. We don't like an instruments only landing.
Right. Nice tie back.
We want to know. Felt good about that. We don't want to know. We want to know. We don't want to not know the how. It's really selfish when we ask how.
Sure. Yeah.
It's really self-driven because we don't feel comfortable.
We're not really trusting him when we want to know.
That's
how.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a... I don't know. That's an important thing.
Good.
Okay, so the biblical precept is be transformed into what God is creating us to be, but let him do the transforming, and then our lives will be true righteousness and holiness and good and acceptable and perfect.
Yes.
But not on our own. We can't do that. Why is this biblical precept so important? So why is it so important that we understand the partnership between the transformation, the putting off of the old and the putting on of the new, and the result?
Well, the whole process is of our walk is to transform us in the likeness of Christ.
Mm.
We're never going to get there, right? But everything we walk through and every experience we have and everything that God gives us is designed to transform us into his likeness.
Right.
And we're not going to get anywhere close to that in our old self.
Mm.
Gosh, no.
So,
do you find yourself like me that you need to be reminded on the daily that this is not by my own strength that this is going to get done? That this partnership, remember I said earlier, you know, when God says what it is and what it's not, that this precept of I will make you into true righteousness and holiness. I will make you, God says to us, into what is good and acceptable and perfect. I will make you into that. I will show you what that is. It says, by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. He's saying, I will show you this. Call to me and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know. He says that. He says, the word is in your mouth and in your heart that you may obey it. He says, God did these things so that men would seek him and find him, but he is not far from us. Mm. He's saying, I promise you that I will do this in you. Let me do it. Now, I'm asking you again why it's so important, but I'll let you move on to the next question because I think then the answers to that question will lift out why it's so important. Mm-hmm. Have you seen success or failure in your own life as it relates to this biblical precept? Now, I've given you a couple examples in very specific ways of how I, when I manage my own way, have seen failure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when I allow God to manage my way, I have success. And I don't mean success financially, and I don't mean success in any way except spiritual success and abundant life the way that God said it should be. And to me, that's the definition of success. None of the other things matter. They pass away. But so I mean spiritual success. Yeah.
To get that success, what jumped out at me was when we talked about being still and being patient and waiting on the Lord, because mm-hmm. we fail when we try to do things in our own flesh without mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. So part of that is talking about what you talked about being patient and being still and waiting on him to show us.
Yes. Yeah. And not only to show us, but to do the work.
To do the work, yeah.
You know, something that I've shared with, it's so funny because seasons of your life, right? Things, themes persist. And I have a friend who's going through, I have a couple friends who are going through divorce. And I also have a couple circumstances in my life, both with my children. Let me cast off the friends who are going through. Let me give you my two personal examples. My husband and I, like many marriages, don't have unity on every single decision that we make. Mm-hmm. In some decisions, we have learned to compartmentalize. I'm like, okay, if you know, a simplistic example is that the inside of the house is pretty much mine to decorate and do with as I see fit, and the outside is his. He wants to put up plants, and I don't love those plants. That's the outside. It's his place. I'm letting him do that. I'm not letting him, but I'm deferring. He often chooses plants I don't love. but whatever, they make him happy. And I don't care that much about the outside, and he deeply cares about the outside, and he knows the same is true about me. I deeply care about this environment. Like, the carpet matters to me. It doesn't matter that much to him. And so in some ways we compartmentalize, and if we disagree, it doesn't matter because we know that's the other one's domain. Because we work together, that comes up there too. We have robust conversations at work about I run a division and he runs a division. And we share, we both respect each other's intelligence and business acumen. We share ideas, but at the end of the day, we defer. I say, obviously that's your division, you know, it's your company, you do. And he often will say to me, I trust you to do whatever you think is right. And so we have compartmentalization. But every once in a while, we have a disagreement. And we're at an impasse because it doesn't necessarily fall in the boundaries of one or the other, but it truly impacts both of us. And there are two examples I'm not going to give the specifics on. But one was something I had a deep desire to do, and it would have impacted our entire family. And he felt strongly that he was not able to do that spiritually and logistically. And I felt so called to do it that I really struggled with that. And this was about 5 years ago. And I said, God, all I know how to do is say, change his heart or change mine. Because our hearts are not in unity on this. And we're stuck. And so please change his heart or change mine. And in that circumstance, God gave me a few merciful things that looked something like what I was hoping for, and that Greg was very open to, that sort of scratched that itch of what I had wanted to do, which was great. And so he changed my heart in ways. He showed me, I have actually a different plan for you. You thought you wanted to do it this way, but actually I have these other things that I have for you that are similar to that. And then there was another thing that came up a couple of years ago, something that Greg wanted to do, and I didn't. And I felt really, really, our hearts were really dramatically different on this issue. And again, I said, change his heart or change mine. And having responded the way that I did to the earlier circumstance, I should just say it. Okay, so I wanted to foster kids. And he felt, as a child who grew up with not only birth siblings, also there were foster kids in his house, and it was not a good experience. And he was like, I can't do that. And I was so sad because I was like, look at our life. We have so much to give. We can give more. We can do more. And he just felt like he couldn't. And I had to honor that, even though I felt called to it. That was really hard. And in the end, what has happened is there are broken children in my children's lives who we have taken in and taken on, You understand what I mean?
Totally.
And even like nieces and nephews that we just have them come stay with us or live with us. And I realized that God fulfilled that quote unquote fostering. It wasn't a formal foster sure. agreement.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of these kids are like, you're like a mom to me. And I think to myself, oh, look what God did.
Yeah.
Because Greg's like, I love those kids.
He gave you to dishonor.
He changed my heart yes. to bend towards the way that he had in mind to do it. And we're so at peace. So at peace. In fact, one of the kids, it came up not about a year ago. He was like, yeah, I would take her because she was actually going into the system. Mm-hmm. And where he had said never, he was like, of course we could take her. Of course we should take her. Because she had been a part of our lives for years, right? Okay, so he changed both of our hearts there.
Yeah.
Then a new thing came up. I've always been really against guns in the home. And I understand that this is, unfortunately, right now, really a hot button issue. Okay, so that's why I didn't want to mention the actual subject. But Greg would like to have a gun in the home. And I would really not like to have a gun in the home.
Yeah, me neither.
And, and you know, I know a lot of people that have guns yeah. in their home and they're at peace with that. And yeah. I don't judge that. Like, I'm not sure. saying no one should ever have guns in the home. It's just not what's right for me. I was raised on the understanding in the family story of one of my cousins who accidentally shot to death his brother in their home mm. with a gun. As toddlers. So for me, that's part of the fabric of who I am. I was yeah. raised with that story. And so, you know, really hard for me to kind of bend towards that. And you came up again, I'd say 6 or 8 months ago. And I said again, God, change his heart or change mine. Because he feels really strongly about it. And I feel really strongly about it. And I was expecting God to change Greg's heart because he had changed my heart about the fostering and made me more towards Greg. But at the end of the day, it's so crazy. There's a really big fox that lives in our neighborhood mm. and he's often on my front yard. And when I take my dog for a walk, he's out in the daytime. And I don't think it's just one. I think it's a family because it's too many times, too many sightings to be just one fox. And I just a month ago, I was walking my dog and I was thinking, I would really like to have like a BB gun. While I walk the dog,
mm-hmm. right?
Because I'm scared of that fox. Yeah. And then in the moment, just again, like I was sharing with you about this thing with Sophia's surgery, in the moment I was like, oh, that's how Greg feels about our family.
Yeah. Yeah.
God had just transformed my heart.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I get that now. Okay. I could agree to that. Mm-hmm. I would have never thought that my heart could be changed on that.
Right.
This is what we're talking about. How God, if you will just be pliable, if you will just be flexible, if you will just be open, if you will just set aside your own self, and if you truly come with that prayer that says, God, change my heart or change his. The last example I'll give you is Gianna and I are going through the college search. And God bless my Gianna because I really want her to go to a Christian college. So we've been looking and looking, and we've looked at Christian and secular schools. And a few weeks ago, we looked at one that I won't say because I would never want to malign that school because I think it's a great school. And she came out of there. She was like, Mom, I just don't feel like I'm being called to go to a Christian school. I just don't think that's the right thing for me. And she gave me a lot of reasons. And she said, I need to go somewhere where my faith is challenged. I can't go somewhere where it's too easy, where faith is part of the fabric and I don't have to fight for it. I need to go someplace where I have to grip it with my own hands so that I know that it's mine. Mm. And I was like, oh, that I appreciate you saying that she's smart and I get that, but I didn't feel that at the moment. I was like, what my response was, why are you inviting adversity? You'll have plenty of time to fight for your faith when you graduate. Go to a place that feels safe. And she said, Mom, I just feel like my life after college, because she wants to be a professor. So she's going to go to graduate school and then she's going to spend the rest of her life in academia. She said, I feel like my life is going to be filled with adversity of the mind towards faith, and I need to be prepared. She said, I just think I'm called to something more. And I was crying. I was so upset because I really want her to go to a place where she can grow her faith in a safe place. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and she grabbed my hand and she said, "Mom, I don't want you to worry about this because we're going to keep looking and we're going to keep praying. And God's either going to change your heart or he's going to change mine."
How cool is that?
And I was like, oh, right.
Don't you hate it when kids do that?
but she's right. Yeah, she because she understood that she and I were both yielded to God's way.
Right.
And that I didn't need to cry or be upset about what she was saying because God's will would win out because right. we were both yielded to it. And that's the transformation that we're talking about in the Ephesians passage and the Romans passage. If you're yielded, if you're pliable, if you're flexible, and you can say, "God, your way, not my way," then he will bring you to the how. He will bring you to the peace. He will bring you to the true righteousness and holiness and the his will, which is good and acceptable and perfect. But we have to be a living sacrifice. First, sacrificing self and saying what I want doesn't matter. Well, what you want matters, God. I put off my old self and I put on Jesus Christ, whatever that looks like. And I know that I don't have an idea. I have no idea what it looks like. That's hard too. That's a sacrifice to say, I don't know what that's going to look like. Okay. So Romans 12:3, I'm going to do this briefly. Romans 12:3 starts a new paragraph. According to the ESV Bible editors, it says gifts of grace. But I included it intentionally. Can you tell me what the main idea is of Romans 12:3? I'll read it again. Okay. "For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned." I teased it out a little bit in what I just was saying to you. But I want to hear your thoughts.
I hear you have to see yourself as God sees you.
Mm-hmm.
And
because
others.
We have the tendency to see ourselves as more than what we are, or we're kicking ourselves.
That's right.
But God doesn't see that.
That's right.
We're the apple of his eye. He thinks we're terrific.
Yep.
Yeah.
So...
100% true. Nailed it. Hi, it's Holly again. What an incredible gift we have to study together and with you today. I'm so thankful for the ways that God's Word helps me to know Him and to know myself better. I hope you felt that gift during your time with us today. We're a weekly Bible study just like you find at your local church. If you're not involved in a study like this, please find one. Make sure the church is teaching the Bible every week and in every situation. In Matthew 10, as Jesus was sending out his disciples to preach the word, he instructed them with this command, "Freely you have received, freely give." We think that applies to us too. So we've created many resources for you on our website, studywithfriends.org. If you miss any part of this program or you want to hear it again, you can visit us there and listen free and on demand. Or you can look for other Bible studies, all of which are free to use and print. studywithfriends.org. Just like those disciples who relied on the generosity of a host for food and shelter, we are also 100% donor supported. So if you are particularly blessed by one of the resources we work hard to provide, please consider a donation of any amount. A monthly partnership is especially helpful, and no amount is too small. We send quarterly gifts to our monthly partners to say thank you. Resources like a pocket Bible or a prayer book or a daily devotional. You can donate one time or become a monthly partner at studywithfriends.org/donate. That's studywithfriends.org/donate. We also love to hear from you via email at info@studywithfriends.org. That's always a huge encouragement to us, so please don't hesitate to write if you have the inclination. See you next time we study with friends.